This episode is brought to you by Square. If you run a restaurant or business, Square has the tools to help you stay connected to customers, shift your business, and navigate this uniquely challenging time. Learn more at square.com/go/opening soon.
Quote unquote normal will never be a thing until we have a vaccine. That comes from Ali Makhdad, Chief Strategy Officer for Population Health at the University of Washington. It is imperative that we look beyond our immediate community and even beyond our leadership to ensure that we are all making practical decisions for a new future. We all need to shake the idea that this will be over, the lights will be turned on, and life will go back to normal. In that light, we're looking to Hong Kong. With a population of 7.45 million people, roughly the size of New York City, it has reported just over 1,000 cases of the virus with only 4 deaths. Unlike most parts of the world, they've not undergone a lockdown. Rather, they've undergone strict policies of social distancing and contact tracing to much success. As it pertains to restaurants and the businesses we plan to start reopening, they seem to be an example of successful and operational containment. Today, we're taking a look into the future at what we can do to reopen while maintaining team safety, customer health, and a sustainable business.
Joining us from Hong Kong first is Matt Abichel, co-founder and chef of Yardbird and Ronin, as well as Sunday Spirits. He's the author of Chicken and Charcoal from Phaidon, and his neighborhood restaurant Yardbird is on the San Pellegrino's 50 Best Restaurants in Asia. Later, we will be talking to Asim Hussain, who co-founded Black Sheep Restaurants in 2012, and now has 26 restaurants, becoming one of the most prolific innovators on the forefront of Hong Kong's ever-evolving culinary scene. They have 2 Michelin stars, and his team has even created a COVID-19 operational playbook, which they've generously shared on their website with the world. So we're going to dive right in with Matt of critically acclaimed Yardbird. We're so happy to have you here.
Welcome, Matt.
Good evening.
Hi.
So we just started chatting about, before we were catching up a little bit. So tell us what has been going on in your world in Hong Kong. And, you mentioned that you shut down for 2 weeks and then reopened, but have mostly been open during this. So give us a little bit of what the landscape has been like.
I think, the first kind of round of it happened just as Chinese New Year was happening. So we were actually closed for the week of Chinese New Year. And at that time is when they started to kind of shut things down completely, as far as like letting people in and out of China. And so that's, I think the Hong Kong government obviously has a very close tie to China, aka it's also China. another contentious topic. But they reacted quickly. I think the general public, I mean, things here, I guess I never really understood it. I moved here 11 years ago and I was always kind of confused by these signs on all the elevators, you know, these lifts are disinfected or sanitized every hour on the hour. And those signs are everywhere. And it never really made sense to me until this, because of SARS. You know, they had SARS and, you know, it was much, much more serious in Hong Kong than COVID has been in Hong Kong. And so all the kind of protocols to, you know, protect each other, protect yourself, the school's closing, the public parks closing, swimming pools, you know, those kind of things were kind of a swift closing from the government. But then also just everyone wearing masks, everyone sanitizing everything all the time. It was quite normal here. It's not, you know, I've never, obviously not to this extent, I've never seen it, but people do wear masks all the time. And so the culture is ready for this kind of thing. And I think a lot of people in Hong Kong saw what SARS did and how devastating it was and didn't not take it very, very seriously. So they took it very seriously and went forward. And then kind of fast forward to, you know, about a month ago, when the second wave came in, when everyone in the rest of the world started freaking out, and it started to become very apparent that this was not something that was just going to affect China or just going to affect Italy, or, you know, that it was something that was going to affect everybody. A lot of people started coming back, a lot of, you know, young students and just everyone that was not in Hong Kong, that is from Hong Kong or lives in Hong Kong, came back. which then brought back, you know, a second kind of onslaught of cases, which is when we decided to close, just for 2 weeks to try and figure out what the hell we're doing. And that's, you know, everything from just implementing these kind of more stringent rules to putting together a really good plan for takeaway and delivery, which is not something we've ever done. So it's pretty much, as far as a business perspective, that's kind of the way it is. It's just kind of the way it's been. It's just lots of changes and constant shifting and waiting for government like rules to come through, and then them being extremely unclear, but having to interpret them, and you know, that kind of thing.
So you guys shut down for 2 weeks in early March, you said, and regrouped. How did you, when you reopened, what kind of things did you do to change your, aside from, which I want to get to, because I think it's, it'll be interesting to hear how you do Yakitori to go. I don't think it's just a normal thing that would, they would hold for 30 minutes the same way that you've been putting it out. But how did you convert the way your staff works, the way your customers come into the restaurant, after that short closure to kind of regroup?
Well, it's, I mean, you can start with the staff. You know, everyone, as you come into the restaurant, as you start your shift, you have to record your temperature. So the manager on duty records the temperature of every single staff member every day when they come in. And then basically, like, I mean, it's very strict. If you don't feel good, like, there's no, like, anything. You have a sniffle, you have a cough, you have any kind of symptom of any sort, then it's absolutely mandatory you don't come to work. You know, whereas I think in our culture, our restaurant culture, that's always been like this kind of weird stigma is like, oh, you know, you're sick, like, you're a pussy, you know, like that kind of thing. Right. It's like that kind of behavior. Obviously, I mean, that's completely off the table now, and just not taking any chances. And then when people come in, first of all, the restaurant has to be, it was up to half capacity. There has to be a meter and a half between every table. There can't be more than four people per table. You can't serve people over a bar anymore. So people can sit at a bar, but you can't serve them over the bar. So you can serve them from behind. So those are kind of like, and then there's partitions. If you basically, like, we have booths, and if those booths, you can't obviously spread a meter and a half, but they're back to back, so you can put partitions. I think that a lot of these rules are up to interpretation and have been interpreted in, you know, whatever ways people see fit, and certain people have been fined and certain people have gotten away with it, and certain people have, you know, kind of created the but I mean, coming into the restaurant, you have to sign a declaration saying that you haven't traveled in the last 14 days. You have no symptoms. We take their temperatures. You know, they sign this paper. They put the pen into a container. We sanitize those pens. Everyone squirts sanitizer on their hands before they sit down. You have to have a mask on if you come into the restaurant. We give them a little wax paper bag to keep their mask in during the meal. If they're waiting, like, outside, we have seats outside that they have to be a meter and a half apart. That's about it, I guess.
Are most of these things adopted by the restaurateur, or are they government mandated?
Those are government mandated. Almost all of those are government mandated. I think, like, there's obviously certain interpretations of them, like how far you're going to take them, how stringent you're going to be. But we were super, like, adamant even before the government mandates came through. You know, we tried our best to figure out what we were going to do and not wait for the government, because, I mean, even when the government did announce everything, it's always, they announce it in Chinese and then they have a English interpretation. And the English interpretation is always very vague. So we just kind of trying to figure it out, you know, and and but always erring on the side of caution and, you know, like just getting through it.
How have the guests like responded to these new restrictions? Has it been a barrier for them wanting to come out to eat? Or do you feel like now that some time has passed, people are like abiding by it because they're just so antsy to get back to restaurants?
People are 100% abiding by it. We've had very little pushback. I mean, like, you know, sometimes people come in I think it's happened twice where, you know, they come in as a party of six and we tell them we can't seat them all together, but we try and seat them 1.5 meters apart, 4 people at one table and 2 people at the other. And if that's not okay, then they can go home. Or they, you know, like obviously this is not our choice or not. This is not like what we want for these people to experience, but we, as long as it's within the framework, we'll do everything we can to make people's, you know, experiences good. And I think it's just what is necessary, you know? And I think that people are going to be fine with it. If they're not fine with it, then, I mean, are we allowed to swear on this thing?
Go for it.
Yeah.
I mean, then they can go fuck themselves. Like, at the end of the day, like, this is the world we live in. This is how, you know, we're trying to run a business that is safe for our employees, that is safe for customers. And, you know, we're working against something that's very, it's just invisible and unknown. So like there's just nothing that we can, no precautions we can't take.
I mean, so given that, you know, there are like these rules and all the restrictions, like from a business perspective, you know, your dining rooms have to be probably at half capacity of what they previously were. Are you filling up that half capacity? Are there enough people willing to come out and dine? And it sounds like you had to diversify your model with takeout. So tell us a little bit about how that's all working out for you.
Yeah, I mean, both restaurants, I mean, Ronin is a very, very small restaurant, so we can only fit 12 people with the half capacity. Given the distance, because it's just like a long kind of hallway of a restaurant. And Yardbird, we're doing much less than half capacity because a large part of our business used to be like people standing around these kind of pillars and drinking and eating and waiting. Waiting was a big part of the experience at Yardbird.
That's a big part of revenue in most restaurants. It's waiting is drinking, and drinking is money. I mean, it's tough.
Yeah.
Go on.
So our food sales are relatively similar at the end of the day because people just eat a lot more now. Like when they sit, they're sitting for 2 hours.
I eat a lot more. I can vouch for that.
Yeah. And the amount people order in takeaway and delivery, like just the sheer quantity. But of course, no booze. So, you know, the kitchen's working kind of the same amount as you would when we were serving 300 guests a night when we're really only serving 120 throughout the night. But you know what? Like, I'm very grateful, like, for what we have and how adaptable Hong Kong is as a city. And like, it's been very, you know, of course everyone feels down and like confused and unsure and uncertain of what the hell is going on. But as a whole, I think that, you know, like, just, you know, they've done a really, the city is just resilient and it's not the kind of place that just like lays down and doesn't take action. So it's been good. We've been lucky.
How, in that light, I asked us in the same question, how do you keep your staff and your team excited to come to work and in light of the anxiety and the stress and the gloom that, you know, that covers having a half empty restaurant?
It hasn't been as much of a challenge. What's funny is I think that, I mean, for me, my kitchen has been really positive and very surprisingly easy just to adapt. I feel like I need to like answer that for myself more. Like how do I stay positive? Why go in there and like everyone's, it seems like they're good, you know? The front of house obviously is a little bit different. It's a little bit more, it's a different effect because like I said, the kitchen is still just kind of pumping food and had a lot of new things to figure out. So it was the new challenges for them kept them distracted enough to be okay.
Do you have a reduced staff, or are you?
No, we're working at full capacity, actually.
Even front of house?
Front house as well, yeah. The difference is, in Hong Kong, most restaurant employees are salaried employees. They're not hourly. So our goal from the beginning was to not lay anybody off and to see how far we can go. You know, we basically kind of treated my restaurant like it was, you know, a couch, and I was 17 and I really, really wanted to buy something, and I just basically dug into it, and we found every facet, every place we could look, how we can produce and work together. And, you know, it's, we're not there yet. We're still losing a good amount of money every month. But it's gotten a lot better. I mean, I'm also lucky because I have an investor who's understanding and who's supportive. And his main thing too is, like, you know, I just don't think, we just didn't want to lose anybody.
So is Hong Kong seeing or other restaurants laying people off, or is that, do you think it's unique that you guys are able to keep full staff?
I think a lot of people have been laid off. I mean, I know a lot of people have been laid off. And that's of course a totally understandable thing. The thing is about Hong Kong is that it doesn't have unemployment like the US or the UK. Like UK, you know, came in really quickly with that 75% of, you know, they'll be covering like 75% of furloughed or laid off people. Whereas there isn't really that support in Hong Kong. Minimum wage is very low. No one in our restaurants paid minimum wage, but it's very low, and taxes are very low. And as you know, cost of living is very high. So, I mean, for us, our priority was just trying to maintain, you know, like we could stand to lose a certain amount of money. Whereas young people or older people that have families and things like that, the cost would just escalate so quickly. And yeah, so I mean, I'm very happy to say that that's the case, and we've managed without it. But there's also wasn't that many options in Hong Kong. Like, you don't have the option of going to the government as a business or as an individual and being like, well, I'm unemployed, can I get half of my salary? It just doesn't exist. So yeah, that's been, and our restaurant is very family oriented. Tried, like, you know, Tara is my sister who you've been, you know, talking to and stuff, but, like, you know, we try and work together as much as we can and take care of each other. You know, we've taken some pay cuts, you know, I've taken a pay cut and upper management has taken a pay cut, but we've done our best to try and keep everyone as whole as possible.
Amazing. I think it's pretty, pretty awesome that you've been able to hold on to your staff, especially given in light that sounds like they don't have a backup plan in Hong Kong. Tell us a little bit about, just cause I'm curious, how do you turn a cuisine that is, like, essentially meant to be served from the chef to the guest and eaten immediately into a takeaway item? How do you do that?
Well, we basically turn to the oldest trick in the book, which are foil chicken bags, like, you know, like rotisserie chicken bags that we have gotten to a smaller size, and that's pretty much it. We serve a limited amount of yakitori, on the delivery, where, you know, like, certain things just don't travel at all. But yeah, I mean, really, it's not ideal. I'm going to say that there's no two ways about that. I mean, there's certain things of our menu that do travel really well, but, you know, it's not the ideal way to eat yakitori.
Right. Have you expanded the to-go menu with new things, or just keeping it limited?
No, we try and do the opposite, actually. We want the to-go menu to be limited. We've tweaked some recipes, you know, changed the batters and things like certain fried items to travel better. The flow of the kitchen has had to be completely kind of reworked, because just the ticket systems that we had before were just like an order fire system. So, like, the ticket comes in for the one, you know, one set of skewers or one skewer or whatever it is, and the chef just makes it right away. And basically, okay, it's up to the waiter to time things out. They just come, we just make things as fast as we can and send them out as fast as we can. So now, just like when you get a giant to go order and now you have to put it all into a bag, it was a big learning curve for us. we had to like carve out a whole separate part of the, like what used to be kind of a service bar. We now is like, we have like two staging areas and plating area, like our bagging areas. It's a very, very challenging concept mentally for me, because it's just like 9 years of not doing that and never even never even considering it, you know.
Right.
That was never, that was never an option. It wasn't something that, you know, but like you said, like, you know, that's, it is what it is. And it, right. And it, at the end of the day, like, people have been really appreciative of it and are excited for it. And, you know, if it gives them some joy and if there's some, and it helps our business obviously hugely, then I, you know, I mean, I hope I don't have to do it forever, but I think I probably will. That's the other reality.
That's what I was going to ask you, if you, if it's something that you would, you know, continue or spin off into a new concept, or, you know, just either because of the economics or because of the response.
I mean, ironically, we were actually in the middle of, before all this shit happened, we were working on a new concept, which is called Roti Tori, and that's a rotisserie chicken concept with kind of a Japanese lens.
Okay.
And that's going to be opening at the end of May, but that was pre COVID. Like, that was like, we started it like 2 years ago, kind of developing it 2 years ago. But ironically, I think that is probably the best, like, that kind of food does travel the best. Like, rotisserie chicken. I would rather. I mean, look, the biggest stress for everybody and is not knowing, right? We don't know what the hell's going on. We don't know what's going to happen. I just want to stay ready and innovate as much as I can within the cuisine that we have, and it does change and it will change. But yeah, I didn't really get in, you know, like, I don't know. It's a weird time to be a restaurateur and a chef and to have to try and even think about the future, you know, like to try and get ready for it. It's a really weird time.
It is. I think, in a lot of ways though, you know, it's the very nature of a cook, of a hospitality professional, to sort of live in the moment, think on the fly, react and respond to how things, you know, happen in an instant. So if anybody in any group can handle this, I think the hospitality industry certainly can. We only have a couple of minutes, but I want to ask you, just as we talked about, you know, obviously the decline of liquor sales in restaurants, and that will probably continue. Have you seen a pickup in, you have a spirit brand, have you seen a pickup in that, or do you think people are drinking less, or do you think people are just getting their booze elsewhere?
I think people are drinking less in general. But I think that was happening again, even before COVID, that we started seeing like a decline in sales and alcohol beforehand. But I think that, I think that on the weekends, people really do go for it. But on the weekdays, we've definitely seen a much less consumption of booze. I think, you know, people got to go. Yeah, I mean, people got to go home to their kids. They got to go home to their wives. They got to go home to reality. And I think that like a lot of people probably use booze to deal with it, but I think a lot of people are avoiding it also because it's just too much. You know, you don't really have that excuse.
I'm finding myself drinking way more. I'm just hitting it hard. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, no, it's.
But it's true. If you take away the social aspect of it, it's certainly.
Yeah.
We are very appreciative of your time, Matt. And
pleasure.
We're definitely looking toward what you guys are doing over there so that we can all get back in a different and new way.
Any parting words or advice for your colleagues and fellow chefs and restaurateurs in the US as they think about what the future is going to look like for them?
It's going to be okay. I think that's, you know, so I'm just going to be, I'm going to be positive on that and just say, you know, it's going to be okay, that we need to just take it one day at a time. That you can't project yourself too far in the future and get caught up in that. And I guess, you know, we got to take care of the people that we need to take care of. And sometimes, you know, our egos and our pride can get in the way. And I think that, you know, if we got to do takeaway and we got to feed people, like that's what we're meant to do and try. You know, I don't know. I think, like you said, you know, chefs and hospitality, F&B, we're resilient and we're creative and now's the time. You know, like you have nothing to lose really, except for everything. So just fucking just go. You know, just go for it. Like there's no time like the present. Just to try. And right. to take this, you know, wear a mask, wash your hands, like take it seriously and don't be scared of alienating people when they come into your restaurant by taking their temperature and making them fill out a form and wearing a mask. Like if anything, it's just going to create a better environment for the future, for your restaurant, for your staff, for your customers. And it's fucking weird. Don't get me wrong, but it helps.
Cool. We appreciate it. Don't fuck around. It'll be okay.
Yes,
we got it.
Do you want to tell everybody where they can find you on social and your restaurants just before we let you go, so they can look?
The restaurant social, restaurant social is Yardbird HK and Ronin HK. I personally do not participate in the social, but the restaurants are on there strong. And yeah.
Thanks again, Matt, for joining us.
Pleasure.
This episode is brought to you by Square. We all know that this is an incredibly challenging time for our friends running restaurants and small food businesses. With social distancing in place, people are staying home and eating in, and restaurants have had to pivot to pickup and delivery only. HRN would usually be recording our podcast from our studio inside Roberta's. But since they've had to close their dining room, they've ramped up their frozen pizza production, set up a wine and grocery shop, and seen their delivery orders skyrocket. Like Roberta's, many restaurants have been changing offerings day by day as they figure out how to best serve their customers. If you run a restaurant or a small business, Square has the tools to help you adapt. One of these tools is the Square Online Store. It lets you set up a free online ordering page with curbside pickup and local delivery so you can keep customers safe. You can deliver orders yourself or integrate with delivery partners. Its order hub lets you manage all your incoming orders in one place, no matter which delivery partners you choose to use. Square has all the tools to help you stay connected to customers no matter where they are. See everything that's available by visiting square.com/go/opening soon.
Okay, so this morning we are welcoming to the show, it's evening here in New York City, but it's the morning in Hong Kong. And we have Awesome from Black Sheep Restaurant Group, who has 24 restaurants and counting in Hong Kong. So we will just dive right in. You know, we wanted to chat with somebody on the other side of the world who has been going through and managing the COVID crisis for you guys. I think it's been since January. Is that right?
Well, first of all, Jenny, we have 26 restaurants. We've worked hard, man. Do not take you away from us.
I'm sorry. The last article I said 24. Yeah, 26. My bad.
As a preface, too, since 2012, which I think is pretty remarkable, aside from this whole COVID situation. Congrats. Yeah,
thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much. It's been a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. So, look, we have been dealing with this COVID pandemic since mid-Jan, but I think I need to sort of take you guys back a little bit to give you guys a broader picture. In Hong Kong, the restaurant industry has been reeling for longer. You know, we last year had a summer of social unrest. There were a lot of political protests. So we have been between a rock and a hard place since last June. In fact, you know, the last year's protests pulled demand 20-30% lower during the height of the COVID pandemic, and I think the worst is behind us now. We were about 60-70% below where we needed to be. So yeah, things have been difficult.
So you guys have been reeling now for like 6 to 9 months. In Hong Kong, the restaurants actually never were instructed to close, right? So you've been just social,
social distancing since January, essentially, and having, so what has that looked like for you all? Like physically?
So there has never been a government mandated shutdown for restaurants. What I think is something that we have done really well in our world is I got together with my leadership team mid-Jan, and we started sort of building a framework under which we felt we could keep our restaurants open. You know, it started with really small things like doing temperature checks for everyone walking into our doors, whether it's members of our team, suppliers, guests in the evening. No one could walk in without having their temperature taken. Then we started adding things like leaving small bottles of sanitizers on every table. Then we started mandating our folks to wear hygiene masks in the kitchens and on the floors of our restaurants. Then we started asking guests to also wear hygiene masks. So we started sort of building a framework that has sort of become this fully blown COVID protocol that we have been following since mid-Jan. I'm really proud of the work that we've done this year fighting the pandemic. You know, I don't know if you guys are aware or not, but we built this. We made our COVID playbook public, and since then it's been, you know, we've had emails from not only restaurant people in Hong Kong, but restaurant people from all over the world expressing their gratitude. I think the government of Hong Kong picked up on everything that we were doing. So we were invited last month, my business partner Chris and I, to come advise the government, the policymakers over here on sort of policies that they were drafting. So it's been a busy spring for us in the Black Sheep world.
I understand. Yeah. We've definitely been looking through the playbook that you guys have created, and I think it's really remarkable, one, that you've built this in such a short amount of time for your own team, but that you've also, you know, kindly shared it with the rest of Hong Kong and with the world. And we're really excited to, you know, be able to share this hopefully with a few more people that haven't found it yet. There's a lot of stuff in here, and I think some of the most interesting stuff is how, to me anyway, and I think, you know, I think it's something that restaurateurs in New York and in the US are still wrapping their heads around, is how to get how to monitor the guest and how the guests, I guess, are perceiving these new protocols that you've put in place. Can you tell us a little bit about how your customers have come into the restaurant and been accepting or maybe not so accepting of temperature checks and those kind of things?
Hey, so I have a few things to say on this, and I'll try to stay organized. The first thing is, as we started building this framework back in Jan, we knew that there was going to be guest backlash. And very early in the piece, we said to ourselves, we're not going to care. We knew that this is something that we had to put in place to protect our people. You know, if you ask me what are three things that have kept me up at night over the last quarter, it's safe, health and safety of my people. One, number one, number two, number three. So we are very hospitable people. Hospitality is what we do. But for this thing, that sort of went out the window. We said that even if this is going to upset our guests, but we are going to make sure that we keep adhering to the protocols that we built. And I'll be honest with you, we have upset people. You know, there was a night early March where we had to turn away over 50 guests across our restaurants in Hong Kong. It may sound like a small number, but across 25, 26 restaurants, but when you're reeling, when from an economic perspective, have been reeling for a year, every dollar coming in counts. So I just think that we've sort of had a maniacal commitment to the protocol that we built. And that's my advice to everyone that sort of is in the process of getting ready to reopen, you have to build these protocols, and then you have to understand that you are doing this to keep your people safe on the front lines. And if that offends people, then it offends people. You know, I was speaking with, I won't name them, but there's a small restaurant team out of New York. They reached out to me last week asking for advice. And I one advice that I had for them, and I have for your listeners as well, is there's going to be a new framework within which we exist. Anyone waiting for things to return to normal is going to be waiting for a long time. I'll in fact say that things are not going to return to normal, at least till the world's ready to deploy a vaccine for COVID on a mass scale. So I think for good players, just doing food and service at a high level is not going to be enough. I think also we now need to understand what it's going to take to find success within this new framework. What do I mean by that? I mean by that, for example, is that I think physical distancing is here to stay. So we won't be able to run our dining rooms at full capacity for at least for the next 4 to 5 quarters. So this is something that I am spending a lot of time with my people on in Hong Kong at the moment, just trying to understand what this new framework looks like, and then trying to sort of answer how do we find success in this new framework.
Right. How do you become or maintain some sort of profitability in a restaurant that's at 50% capacity? I mean, if how does that continue for a year, or is the goal simply maintain stability and not lose more than you can handle over the next year, and you know, look forward to 18 months or 6th quarter, 7th quarter, whatever is out there?
We for Black Sheep, we'll only be able to survive this if we survive this, is because we've done good work in the past. You know, we've been around for 8-9 years now. And we had a lot of success our first 6-7 years of business. So that sort of will allow us to continue to survive. I know for other players, how do you survive 3 consecutive quarters of financial losses in a business where margins are razor thin? It's impossible. Right. So I do acknowledge that we are in a privileged position. What else do I want to say around this? We are lucky in Hong Kong that we are now seeing business starting to return. For example, last night was a Wednesday night here, and yesterday was the 4th consecutive day where we've had 0 cases. That's the first time that's happened since early Jan for us. So the restaurants were really busy. People are starting to come out again. I haven't seen the numbers yet. I think financially we had the best night we've had this year last night. So the good news is this is not the end of restaurants. You know, we are going to come back, but we just have to understand that we are going to return, and we'll have to exist under a new framework. I see reports about how this is the end of brick and mortar restaurants, and I strongly feel that that stuff is overstated. Nothing will come close to the romance and charm of eating at a restaurant. That you don't get the same love from a box delivered to your doorstep.
That is true. There's not the same amount of enjoyment. And I think that is really going to be comforting for our listeners here in the US to hear that people are starting to come out and that it, you know, and are starting to dine. I mean, do you feel like there's pent up demand and that, you know, as the days are getting farther and farther between since the last reported cases, that people are starting to book more reservations? And are you seeing any signs of that?
Yes, of course. I can only speak for what's happening within our world. We've built up really amazing goodwill with our community, with our guests. And I know that our people were chomping at the bit. They couldn't wait to come out and support us. So I've met a lot of guests this week in our dining room saying that this is the first restaurant I've come back to. I couldn't wait to come back and support you guys. So my advice also would be to sort of leverage the goodwill that operators have built over the last few years in whatever city they operate in. We are seeing a lot of support. In fact, I was being a little paranoid last night, and I was speaking with my team, and I was saying that we have to make sure that we keep adhering to these protocols that we've built. You know, like I was saying earlier, some things within this new framework are here to stay: physical distancing, sanitizer bottles on all tables. We have mandated everyone on our team to wear hygiene masks. So, with restaurant demand coming back, I was saying to my team that we have to make sure that we remain maniacal about following the procedures and protocols that we built. I have been saying this since Jan, that this, even if doing all of this increases our chances of survival by 1%, I like those odds. I'll take those odds. You know what I mean? In a world with there's so much uncertainty, even 1% helps.
For sure.
I think as a diner myself, I like the idea of going to a restaurant that's taking it very seriously and that has these sort of, you know, these very clear outlines of how they're addressing the issues that are facing restaurants today. I think on that,
I'm sorry, we also have to acknowledge that it sucks. Like temperature checks at a restaurant and hygiene masks and sanitizer bottles, it's horrible. But
simple practical question, but how do diners wear a face mask and have dinner? I feel like that's a question that comes up a lot. Is there a time when you can pull it down?
So what we do is we offer every guest a paper bag. So you walk in with a hygiene mask, you take it off as you're eating, you put it in a paper bag, and you take it back on as you're leaving the restaurant. So I'll send you guys some pictures. we made these really neat paper bags where guests can store their face masks as they're eating.
Has there been a lot of like customer education when you started doing these things? Were people, you know, were people confused? Were they looking around trying to figure out what to do?
So there was a lot of we had to do a lot of team education. Hong Kong is an extremely international city, similar to New York. Lots of languages spoken inside a restaurant. People from different backgrounds, from different countries. So we had to. It was almost like being back at school. We had to sort of conduct a lot of classes and training and coaching about what this thing was and how we prevent ourselves. That was something that we did extensively in Jan and Feb. For guests, I think what helped us and what has helped us is Hong Kong dealt with the pandemic 20 years ago. We had SARS in Hong Kong 20 years ago. So whatever PTSD we developed at that time, I think is helping us. You know, it's not uncommon in Hong Kong during flu season for everyone in the subway to be wearing a hygiene mask. So some of this has been a part of our daily life in Hong Kong for the last 20 years. I actually joke that I haven't touched an elevator button in Hong Kong since SARS. You know, so that sort of helps.
Yeah, I think in those ways, it is true. It's like nobody here wears a face covering. And so this is all like very on a regular basis. So this is all very new territory, I think, in the U.S. and in major cities here. And I think it's part of the reason why we were so ill-prepared and why I think people are having such a hard time envisioning what this all is going to look like when when people do start reopening and returning on this, you know, slow phase back. And, you know, we asked a little bit about the practicality from the diner perspective, but also, like, what about the staff? I mean, it's, you know, common for chefs to be tasting dishes. It's common for somms to be tasting their wine before they pour a glass. Like, how has that changed, and how have you been communicating that to the guests so that their, like, you know, minds are at ease?
So I'll give you a small example. We have one of our restaurants is this restaurant Ballon. It's one Michelin star. It's an excellent restaurant. We had an issue there a few nights ago, where guests ordered a beautiful bottle of wine. The somm took their mask off to smell the wine, and the guests didn't like it. So I think there's so much understanding and awareness of the issue that that protection against the disease is taking priority over everything else. And I think that sort of is when I talk about this new framework. That's the new framework, that maybe somms need to go to the back room when they open a bottle of wine and take their mask off, they smell the wine, taste the wine, decant the wine, and then bring it back to the dining room.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely this strange new world that we're going to be entering, and I think it'll be less intimate in some ways. I mean, do you feel like the dining culture is changing there because of all these, like, you know, hygiene procedures to make people feel more comfortable to want to come out? Do you feel like it's changing, like, the lively, convivial nature of how your dining rooms maybe used to be?
100%. You know, it's not the same level of when I walk into a dining room, when I walked into our dining rooms this week and last week, I haven't seen the same level of, it's not as convivial, or it's not the same level of camaraderie. But people are also nervous, you know, we're just starting to come back out, and we are unsure if we are going to get hit with a third wave of infections. So in Hong Kong, we had our first wave of infections in Jan. There was a second wave of infections in March. So people are wary, and it definitely has, it's tough, you know, it definitely sort of, it's not the same as before. This is why I keep talking about people wanting, operators wanting the things for things to go back to normal. We'll be waiting for a long time. Right. You know, I say that good restaurateurs are like jazz musicians. They improvise. They've got to improvise now.
Right. How are you maintaining, keeping staff morale in a good place when there's this obvious addition of anxiety of one getting themselves sick? There's an added stress that they need to be at work and take care of their customer and their coworkers and contribute towards the larger picture of your restaurant group.
Man, that's a really good question. You know, adversity is an interesting thing. You know, it either breaks you or it sort of brings you together. And I'm happy to report that the latter has happened in the Black Sheep world. You know, we at the height of this, even as we were keeping our restaurants open, we said to our people on the front lines that if they feel uncomfortable being in the restaurants, we would completely understand if they wanted to take a leave of absence. We are a community of close to 1,000 strong. Not one person took a leave of absence. Of course, that's driven by economics as well. But also, I think that this adversity has brought us together. But I will say on this that we did lots of really cool things over our first 6-7 years of existence to invest in our culture. You know, in the Black Sheep world, we're sort of crazy about our culture, our community, investing in our people, and that served us well. I think all the goodwill that we built with our people to within our community over the last 7-8 years, I needed all of that, every inch and ounce of that to fight this thing. Interesting. It's a good question. I understand what you're saying, but I think we really had to leverage our culture.
Understood. No. We're immensely appreciative of your time and getting up this morning and chatting with us. Any parting advice for us on the other side of the world that are, you know, months, I guess, behind where you guys are right now?
Yeah. I want to reiterate what I said earlier. This is not the end of us. I just, to anyone listening and feeling pessimistic, I just want to say to you that we're going to come back. We're going to come back in a big way. I'll, in fact, argue that the work that we do, the work that restaurant people do will be even more important when all is said and done. So just stay optimistic, keep fighting. We'll get to a good place.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing with us. Can you, and I agree with you, you know, we think if there's one thing that we've always learned is that hospitality always comes back. People always need a place to enjoy, to celebrate, to dine, and to, you know, have that place where they feel special and welcomed and just enjoy good food and everything. So it's tough now, but we know everybody needs to hang in. But tell our listeners where they can find your SOP and where they can find more information about Black Sheep and you guys on social as well.
Oh man, I should have prepared this. the book is on our website. So it's just blacksheeprestaurants.com /COVID. We actually are in the process of updating our book because it's been because now there's some responsibility on us because so many people are relying on our book. So we've had new information in the last 4 or 5 weeks. So we're going back and updating the book with new information. For example, one thing we're seeing now in Hong Kong is that our supply chains are being disrupted. So we're adding a chapter on how we're dealing with that, how we're developing our menus, considering these global food supply chain disruptions.
Sure. And we'll link to your playbook as well. I think it's going to be crazy helpful for people to be able to read through this that haven't already found it. So thank you again.
You're welcome, guys. Please stay safe.
Same
Absolutely.
To you.
You as well. We look forward to hearing about 27 and 28.
Yep, thank you.
Opening Soon is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You could also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.